people don't realise how strong they are. You know, I think with me, I didn't realise that I was actually strong underneath. And I might be little on the outside, but on the inside, I'm strong. And sometimes I think we don't quite realise how strong we are.
That's Nadia Feiner in episode 103 of the All Things Risk podcast. Hey everyone, we are back with another episode of the All Things Risk podcast. My name is Ben Cattaneo. I am your host. This is my show. It's all about risk and uncertainty, and we go long form here with some fascinating people so that we can all embrace uncertainty and learn a little bit more about the biggest risks of our times. Before we get into our latest episode, there's some business to take care of, as usual. This episode is brought to you by Audible, the home for audiobooks. I love Audible. I use it all the time, particularly when I'm out running. I've just finished Endure by Alex Hutchinson, and I like that what you can do is sync up your audiobook with where you are with the Kindle version of the same title. And the way that Audible works is that you get a credit every month to get an audiobook. You can choose from over 180,000 titles, and as a listener to All Things Risk, you can get a free 30-day trial with an audiobook that is yours to keep no matter what. To take advantage of this, simply go to audibletrial.com/allthingsrisk if you are in the USA, or the link in the show notes if you are here in the UK. Okay. Let's get into our latest episode. This is a fun, powerful conversation that's all about taking risks, not hiding, becoming bigger, and being stronger than you think you could be. My guest is Nadia Feiner. Nadia is one of the UK's foremost business coaches, and she's also an accomplished author. And as you'll hear, for many years, Nadia had an insecurity, and that was about her voice, the way she sounded. And that insecurity affected many aspects of her life. And it wasn't until she stopped hiding behind that and that she started to embrace it that she began to flourish. And this took bravery, which, as you will also hear, is a skill. Nadia took all of that and turned it on its head by launching her brand, her site, and helping many others, particularly entrepreneurs, to unleash their bigness. And in fact, Nadia's latest book is called Little Me, Big Business. And if that's not enough to convince you that Nadia plays big and faces fears, then how about knowing that she's gotten into boxing recently and has fought 3 matches already? And we talk about all of that. We get into Nadia's approach to risk-taking and lots more. She's very fun and engaging, so let's go meet her. Here's Nadia Feiner. Nadia, welcome to the All Things Risk podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here and to be talking about risk. I've never spoken about risk before, so it's good to be here.
This will be fun, I'm sure. And to kick things off, I would love to hear from you about how you kind of introduce yourself and what do you say that you do, who are you, all of that great stuff.
Okay. So I'm Nadia Feiner. I'm a business coach and an author. My most recent book is called Little Me, Big Business. I work with entrepreneurs primarily, people who feel little, who feel like they have been holding themselves back, but who want to go bigger. So in business, this means that I work with entrepreneurs who want to make more money and have a bigger impact But I also work with people who maybe have a job and who work and who want to achieve more in their life somehow, maybe achieve a goal of some kind, but they're stuck or they're scared, and I help them to push past those things so that they can unleash their bigness, if that doesn't sound too weird.
Ooh, no, it sounds very, very compelling, and we'll get into that. Before we do, I would like to know how you got into doing all of this stuff. Is this the type of thing that you envisaged you'd be doing when you were growing up?
No. So my kind of professional journey's been a bit strange. I never really knew what I wanted to do with my life. It was I jumped from job to job, really. Not like a vagrant or something, or a hobo, but more just kind of trying to explore different avenues. I started off in accountancy for a very short number of weeks and thought, what the hell is this? Not going to do that. And then went into marketing, ended up in a consultancy. But all the time I was searching for something I actually enjoyed and felt passionate about. And one day I was with a friend and we were in the pub and we were talking about this search for success and fulfillment, and we decided to write a book, and that was my first book. It was called More to Life Than Shoes. We went on a big journey to interview all these amazing women to discover how they'd achieved what they did, because me and my friend Emily felt a bit clueless, like we just didn't really know what to do with our lives. And that was the beginning of it, really, because from there I launched a business off the back of the book, a kind of network for people who were searching for fulfillment and success and who needed help. And then from there I got into coaching, focusing mainly on people growing a business and looking to scale up. So I kind of went from one thing to the other, but looking back, it does feel like everything's kind of pointed me towards this moment in time, and the things I've experienced personally, which I can tell you a little bit about, I think they've really kind of contributed to that slightly random sort of professional journey.
That would be really interesting to hear, because a lot of us, and I think we're in this, I guess we are in this gig economy, but a lot of my listeners have got professional jobs, maybe corporate jobs that work in organizations. And I find it's really difficult to kind of switch off your work identity from your personal identity. The two things meld, and particularly entrepreneurs also, you know, they take some, like what you've done, your personality and who you are has become a huge part of how you deliver your business and your business.
Yes, it has. Because so just to give you a bit of a background, and then this will all make a bit more sense if I explain this bit. So for me, all my life, I've been kind of hiding from something. My biggest insecurity, the thing that made me feel most awkward and shy and scared, and I sort of discovered it when I was about 15. I was in a French lesson, and there was a language laboratory. I don't know if you know what I mean, but we had headphones and you had to talk French into like a recording device and then listen to yourself back. And when I listened to myself back, I heard this kid speaking but saying exactly what I had just said. And it really confused me until I realised, after a few seconds, the penny dropped, and I realised that the voice I could hear was me. And, you know, in those days, I'm quite old, but in those days, you didn't really record yourself much. So this was the first time I'd ever kind of heard how I sounded. And it wasn't how I imagined I sounded at all. And it really, it shocked me a little bit. And I think it made me feel really self-conscious, because I realised that I actually sounded super young, like a tiny kid. And in that moment at school, I almost took like a vow of silence, but not exactly silence. I mean, obviously I still spoke, but I didn't I decided to not speak in like public situations. I would hide away. I would avoid anything that would kind of draw attention to the way I sounded. So through my teens and then like young adulthood, I was basically hiding, whereby I would avoid giving talks or being on video or film or being recorded, or I didn't even phone anyone I didn't know, you know, because people, I didn't want anyone to judge me. So, you know, all through that kind of period and then through my early kind of professional life, it was super awkward because I was kind of pretending to be someone I wasn't, but then also hiding at the same time. And employers would do these strange things that I couldn't quite fathom. You know, they'd ship me off to elocution lessons and try and get me to get some gravitas.
Who's they?
Like, I remember one was an HR director, at one time it was a boss. So I've done all these weird things where I've like laid on the floor and done breathing exercises so that they wanted me to sound, you know, more gravelly and grown up and, you know, be more presentable, that I could somehow be suitable to be put in front of clients. I mean, it just made me feel really self-conscious. And I had this one boss who told me that, I mean, I was a little bit silly as well. So combine the silliness with sounding like you're about 8 years old. And this woman told me that I had to have work Nadia and home Nadia, and that they weren't the same, which I thought was really strange. And I knew that I think at that time, I didn't know why, but I just knew that didn't make sense. I knew that you couldn't possibly have a separate personality at work because it would be completely exhausting. But at the same time, I was also constantly being told that, you know, that I didn't sound right and that I needed to somehow to change. So you can imagine then that it was a strange combination of things. And I think gradually as an adult, like a more mature adult, I've had to really try and overcome this insecurity and these doubts and the sort of the confidence issues that it brings about, because you can't go through life hiding. You don't get a lot done when you're hiding because nobody knows you're there. And I feel like if I was to have continued to hide, and for me that hiding kind of meant that, you know, as an entrepreneur, I would avoid, like I said, phone conversations. I'd never give talks. I didn't talk about myself on my website. I had like one photo that was about 100 years old. You know, I was just literally not there. And it makes it hard to connect with people when you do that, you know?
Of course. And when you just said that it affected the way that you had your, what you put on your website, I found that to be interesting because you're not speaking on your website. So it sounds like this, obviously this would have a huge impact around just the stories you tell yourself and then how you project your identity across in a variety of forums.
Yeah. I mean, the silly thing is, it's not just about voice, is it? Like you say, it's visual as well. It's he's doing things like creating a brand and then hiding behind the brand, talking about we instead of I, not being in photos, not taking credit for stuff that you've achieved, even all kinds of stuff. And I think that that leads to you playing small. And in fact, I'd never really heard that term before. It wasn't until I did the ultimate silly thing in business, whereby I decided that the best way of hiding would be to bring somebody into my business. I was running a PR service and I brought someone in to help me, and she was so loud and such a dominating character that actually I thought, oh, this is good. I can hide behind her. She can like be the face of it all and I'll just be in the background. But the thing is, although that would have been on some levels useful, it was very frustrating in other ways, and I didn't really want someone else taking the credit for everything. Mm. And we, you know, it ended badly. We fell out, and she accused me of playing small and said that I was holding the business back. And I think someone calling you out on your stuff, sometimes it takes that. Obviously, I wasn't very happy about it. Mm-hmm. I was very angry, but you know, what I think at the end of the day, I thought maybe there was an element of truth in what she said. And that was the most upsetting thing, the idea that maybe she was right and I was holding the business back because I was hiding. Mm. And it took a lot of soul searching after that business closed to make some decisions about the way I faced up to things going forwards.
Could we talk about that a little bit in terms of the decision-making process that you went through and how you made those types of decisions to, I guess, it sounds to me like you made the decision to actually just, at the end of the day, embrace who you are. But how did you get there?
Yeah, I did. I made that decision. But the way I make these decisions, I've been trying to kind of unpick it and understand what it is and what I do in that process. I think my fallback position is to run away. I guess it's flight or fight, fight or flight, and you resist things, don't you? You know, your body's going, don't do that, you'd be nuts, why would you do that? Run as fast as you can in the opposite direction. But then I always get this hunch that the thing that I'm hiding from, and I refer to this quote by Joseph Campbell, which I really like, and actually I was thinking about it today, because he said, the cave which you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. And so, I know, whenever I say it, it makes me go weird and goosebumpy, because I think it's so true, the cave which you're afraid of, the cave holds the answers, and yet that thing, that very exciting opportunity, is scary, and you're resistant to that because you don't want to be in an unsafe position. You don't want to take risks. You want to do this, just keep doing the same old, because you know it will be okay. So once you understand that the scary stuff is in the cave and that's the exciting thing, and that's where change happens and good stuff and exciting opportunities, once you understand that, that's where you have to kind of make a decision, isn't it, to face up to that and lean into it rather than run in the other direction. So when I was feeling really sad about the fact that my business had fallen apart and I'd had this big argument with my business partner and it had all gone pear-shaped, I spent a lot of time soul-searching because I obviously hadn't planned for that to happen. You know, I'm the kind of person that lines opportunities up. You know, I have a plan and I'll think, okay, I'll do this, and then the next thing I do will be this other thing, and it's all one thing leading to the next. And in that way, you know, you're never spending weeks on a sofa eating ice cream because you know what's coming. So when the rug was pulled from under me and it all went wrong, I had a lot of time to think, and I realised that for me, at that moment, the scariest thing would have been to embrace my voice and talk openly about it and really kind of lean into it rather than hiding from it. And then it took me a while to convince myself that it would be a good idea, and that actually, you know, I was afraid that people wouldn't take me seriously. I was afraid they'd laugh at me, that you know, that I just wouldn't be able to handle it, that that it would be deeply sweaty and uncomfortable. So it took a while to kind of decide that I would embrace it. And the first thing I did was, rather than creating a brand and being a coach with a random business name. I decided to just be myself and use nadiafiner.com and just be me and have photos of me on the site. But then, you know, beyond that, I knew that I had to do stuff with voice and that I had to embrace it. And that was when I created my kind of tagline and then the official name of my business, which is Little Voice, Big Business.
I love that. That's fantastic. And when you started to set out doing this, I presume you didn't have it mapped out. Perhaps you did, but I imagine the fear was still very present when you started playing with this. But I'm curious if you started with a series of experiments or if you just said, you know, big bang, I'm all in. This is what I'm doing.
No, I think for me it's usually baby steps. I decided to do it, but I didn't know how far I could push it. So I thought, you know, the first thing to do would be to create this brand. And then I decided I would launch my own podcast with that name, because I thought that's kind of a really scary thing to do, because then it's just your voice and it's completely kind of exposed. And then from there, it was just a series of little decisions. I would say it's also a constant battle because I still have this desire to run away and hide, and I do find things difficult, you know. I find, like, I did a talk the other day and I still got really nervous. I still get doubts about whether, you know, people will think I'm a Wally and that whether or not I should say stuff. And I find, like, the constant visibility required these days when you're running a business, I find that quite challenging, because you know, it's the complete polar opposite of hiding, isn't it? You have to be online, sharing your stories, being seen, being, you know, talking openly. And I can tell when I'm getting scared, because I'll hide and I won't post, or I'll, you know, avoid being in pictures, that kind of thing. So it is a constant, it's an ongoing process.
Right. Do you notice yourself though when you're doing that?
I notice myself doing it, because I'll kind of shy away from opportunities, or I'll, you know, it's just things like I still don't like talking about my success. I find that really, like, awkward and weird. I think once you start hiding a little, it's really easy to continue to do it and to get back into it feels weird. So say, for example, I know I've got to record a few podcast episodes of my own, and because I'm not scheduled in to speak as an, like, this is an interview, right? And we booked it. And so although I tried my best not to do it, you know, I committed, and so therefore I had to do it. But when it's just a date with myself and the mic, it's easy to kind of keep shifting it and not doing it. And then I find myself doing all kinds of other things which are not relevant or important, but they're easier, you know?
Yes. Well, there's so much great stuff there. One of the things, when you were talking about this whole thing about branding, there's a book I recently read by Lewis Howes. Do you know who he is? The Masks of Masculinity. So it's about, you know, about us men and the different masks that we wear. And I think we all go through exactly what you just described, you know, the just wanting to hide and hide behind various masks. And and when you talk about the branding thing, that was incredibly interesting, because I think we all do that, whether we're an entrepreneur or we're working in an organization. You know, we're waiting for things to line up or be perfect or someone else to do something before we try and take a bit of a leap of faith. So there's what you say, and I love the Joseph Campbell quote as well, because it just sort of transcends. We all have this as human beings. I think we all have this tendency to hide. It's very human, and that's what makes what you do, I think, quite powerful, because the authenticity says, well, I can kind of trust this person because I know who they are. And if you have this very polished sort of brand, but they never see your face and who you are, then it becomes I think you can get very suspect if you're a prospective client.
I think it's difficult to connect when someone's not visible. And, you know, I always encourage my clients to do it too, where, you know, not to be over, you know, in your face, but it's easier to connect with someone when you see them regularly, you see their face, you get eye contact, even if it's through a video or photography. Eyes are so important. And I think as well, you mentioned kind of authenticity and being honest. I remember one time I was about to give a talk and a friend said to me, because I was like, oh my God, I'm so nervous. And she said, don't tell everyone. Like, you mustn't tell everyone. And I did. I do tell people. And I feel like when I tell them I'm nervous, you know, they can tell because my voice wavers and I'm, you know, I look nervous. I mean, I'm not like sweaty or anything, but like, you can just tell. And I think when I'm honest about it, I think people, they like you and they connect with you.
Absolutely.
And as long as you're not just making it up for effect. Yeah. If it's true, I think it's important to say. And, you know, I always say, you know, that I make a little joke and I just say, you know, even though I'm nervous, even though all I wanted to do is sit on the sofa and, like, watch Netflix and, you know, I had to push myself to get out here and stand in front of you despite feeling scared. And I wanted to do that because I care enough to tell you this stuff. Like, that's important. And if you're honest, I think people appreciate your effort more and they warm to the fact that you pushed yourself past your fears to do it.
Absolutely. And I think when that happens, you can also see a little bit of yourself in what the speaker is going through, right? So there's a connection that can very easily be made. And in my view, the wrong thing, and I struggle with this myself, the wrong thing would be to try and hide it, because you can tell when someone's trying to hide it, right? And that's even worse, because it's just, so this guy's kind of not honest, you know?
Yeah, of course. So, and like when I was running my PR business with a business partner, and she was quite the dominant sort of character, I found myself trying to be somebody I wasn't. Mm. I was trying to like almost act out how I thought an entrepreneur should be. Mm. And it was really uncomfortable. It caused me a lot of stress and anxiety, and it was, you know, it was not a good time because I'm just not like that. I just can't be like that. And I didn't want to live my life in that way. I like to work hard at things, and I like to do the things, you know, that are my zone of genius, if you like, but I'm not keen on, you know, blagging and pretending and, you know, sort of swanking around like somebody I'm not. And I just felt like I can see it now that a lot of people do it, where they've got the mask on, like you say, and they're trying to be somebody that they're clearly not. And I think that leads to a disconnect, like we said, and it's uncomfortable for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it absolutely is. And also when you're talking about your voice, and I do this podcast, and every week or so I edit my podcast, and I can't stand the sound of my voice when I do the editing. I say, oh my God, did I sound like that? Why did I ask the question that way, etc. But we all have it, and it's part of being a human being. So I think that's wonderful. I think it's a great way to go about things. And if you're going to be running your own business and being, you know, an entrepreneur, well, one of the wonderful gifts or one of the wonderful things that you can, that it allows you to do, is just to be yourself. It's harder when you work for somebody else.
Yeah, exactly. Although I would argue that I feel quite strongly actually that there's a need for more authenticity, even in big businesses. I still can't quite get over the fact that, you know, I was told all those years ago to like leave my personality at home. I think it's important to embrace people's strengths, and you get more out of them if they're actually allowed to be themselves and to be honest and human, rather than trying to create almost like robot people.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. And then that allows organizations to kind of keep their some of their best people.
Yeah, exactly. Because people are happier and they're going to do better work if they're able to be authentic and themselves rather than feeling like that sort of slightly sort of awkward, you know, having to check yourself before you speak or write anything. It's a bit strange.
It's exhausting. I can you know, raise my hand and say, yep, been there, done that. It is very exhausting.
Yeah, it's not cool either. And I think, you know, I think about the humanity of brands and the people that work there. And it's such an amazing thing to bring all those people together and to have all the different strengths and all the different personalities. Mm. And it's just a shame when you try and bring everybody into a sort of carbon copy or a cutout of a kind of robot person. I don't think you can run a business like that.
No, although it happens far too often, unfortunately.
And that's why people try and escape.
Exactly. Yeah. And the cycle continues. So I agree. Something needs to change there. It's everything in the corporate space. Not everything, but a lot of it is very monoculture. And we need to. And we know, you know, from agriculture, monoculture is not good because you just deplete the soil of the nutrients.
Oh, I love that. That's such a good analogy.
Yeah. I think I lifted it from somewhere else, but so it's not mine. I won't take any credit for it. But I'm going to put you on the spot now, though, because I will ask you about your successes.
Oh, God.
What did you find when you started to do this? Because if you look at the testimonials of your, you know, of the people that you've worked with, it's very impressive. So what have you found by doing that? I guess if we think about it from a risk lens, you know, you might have thought, well, I'm taking a massive risk here because I'm not going to get any clients. People are not going to work with me. My business has a higher risk of failing. And
Well, it's funny, actually. I've never really worried about the risk of failing as such. I worry about so many other things. I don't tend to worry about that. It's more, you know, I've always felt like I can get clients. People always come to me and recommend other people. That side of things seems to be fine. I think the risks that I've faced have been around things like pricing, you know, how to be confident enough to charge your worth, for example, or how to seize opportunities, or how to have those difficult conversations, and just generally to be a bit stronger and feistier. And over the years, I've been doing a lot of thinking about this because I feel like I have really changed as a person, insofar as I'm just much stronger now. Things don't faze me quite as much, and I just remember being afraid of so many things and not feeling very courageous at all. So I always knew that the work itself, I always kind of had a sort of quiet confidence around that. Mm-hmm. But it was more all the other stuff that goes with it. I kind of doubted myself on that front. So it's a bit strange, really. I guess it's kind of, maybe a lot of other people feel like that. They know they can do the work. It's just they're not sure if they'll be able to be visible enough or be strong enough to deal with the challenges that come with it, you know.
So to sell themselves, to price appropriately. Yeah.
And to kind of be brave enough to be different, to be brave enough to be yourself, to do things like, you know, when I wrote my book, the second book, Little Me, Big Business, would I be brave enough to do that, to tell my story and be brave enough to create something and then put it out there? That kind of thing is the stuff that I have always struggled with. And, you know, also, like, if you launch something and you it's not just kind of sitting there and relying on people coming to you, which does seem to happen on its own organically, but when you launch and you're reliant on, say, 20 people coming at once or 50, that's quite frightening, I find, because there is more risk associated with that. If you've said you're doing something, you know, you've announced it to the world, and then if it doesn't work, it's, you know, you feel like a bit of an idiot, really.
Well, it's a, it is a risk.
Yeah, there's risk.
But it sounds to me like what you're also saying is that bravery is not necessarily a character trait. It's more of a skill. It's a skill that you can practice.
Yeah, for sure. I believe that bravery is different to confidence because I always thought that confidence was something you were born with or you weren't. And then when I wrote my first book and researched and did all those interviews with these women who'd achieved amazing things, we discovered that confidence is kind of a trick. People are just pretending to be confident when they're not. And a lot of people don't identify as, oh, I'm a confident person. And I realized that even when you don't feel confident, you can still be brave. You can practice bravery. And so that's something that I've been trying to do more so recently by doing things that scare me and trying to overcome that fight or flight instinct. And trying to sort of push myself to do things that scare me regularly. And I think it has, like I said, it has really had an impact on my life. So of all the random things to have ended up doing, I've started boxing. And I've actually had 3 fights now. And as I'm talking to you now, don't tell anyone, but I have a bit of a black eye.
Oh, wow.
I know. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to wear purple eyeliner on the other eye just to balance it out. But, yeah, so I've been doing boxing for a couple of years now.
Okay.
And, yeah, it's scary, very scary.
How did you start? Where did you decide or how did you decide that you want to do boxing?
Well, it kind of, it came about a little bit by accident. I was working out with a personal trainer, and you know sometimes they have equipment and they just say, oh, let's do a bit of this. And so we did a bit of punching of pads, like, you know, when they hold up the pads, and he just said, oh my goodness, like, you're good at this. And I was quite surprised because I'd never done it before, and we practiced a little, and then he moved away and referred me on to a gym, like a proper combat gym, where I live, and I got involved there and started going once a week, and it just kind of escalated from there. Partly, the first fight came about a year ago, and I'd heard about it, and they were looking for people as a white collar kind of event. And
So this is like white collar boxing. Yeah. And do you wear like a headgear?
Yeah.
And
I do try and wear headgear because I need my brain for work. So I was wearing a headguard, and basically when I heard about it, I thought, that's probably quite a bad idea. And then I thought, oh, I think I'll do it.
Yeah. So what would Joseph Campbell say?
He would say definitely do it. But I think it, as the first fight got closer, I kind of realized what I'd done and that it was it was actually a lot more extreme than I had in mind. I think I thought it was just going to be like tapping away at somebody and it wouldn't really hurt and it would be fine. But the actual reality of the situation was that it was in front of about 800 people.
Wow.
And yeah, it was brutal.
So what happened?
Well, the first one I didn't win, but I survived and I was fine. I held my own and I thought, my goodness, like that was literally the most extreme experience I've ever had. And then I had an opportunity to do it again. I did. And I did another one like a year later. So after the first one, which was recently, and that was like a really proper one, another white collar, but I just felt like I'd come so far and, you know, I won and I felt like my technique was really good and I was scared. Like I had, get nerves like you cannot imagine. But I overcame all these things. I mean, just comparing the two situations 1 year on was amazing to me to think that, you know, it was just, I kept like having these panics over silly things and like sleepless nights and all that sort of stuff. And then the second time round, it was still really scary, but I knew what was to come. And I think it's impacted my life in a lot of ways. I'm just able to deal with stuff. I feel stronger and I can have like difficult conversations. And, you know, when something scares me, I think, well, there's not 800 people watching you have a fight with someone who's trying to take your head off. Like, if you can do that, you can do anything. So, it's been really empowering. And then physically, I'm just a lot stronger now. And it's really helped me. And I think it's just so funny because people always say, oh, my goodness, I cannot believe that was you doing that. Particularly if they've heard me speak and they've read my book and stuff, they're really shocked. So I kind of like that. But I think, you know, it just shows that bravery, like all the muscles I've been developing over the past couple of years, like bravery is a muscle and you can work on it. So actually there's kind of no reason for us to shy away from things. We can just practice till we're able to do it.
That's so awesome. From your first fight to the second fight, and I guess your last one, presumably your technique's gotten better, but mental game probably has gotten much better.
Yeah, it has. I mean, I'm not going to lie, there was still, I had like a really, like the first time, I just had like panics over different things and I, you know, you had to get like weighed in front of people. Just, oh, that's horrible. And I was just a bit whingy. I just remember moaning a lot and being like, I can't do it. And my coach just going, just get a grip, stop being an idiot. And it was challenging. And then this time, you know, a couple of things still happened where, like, one, I had a bit of a panic attack. Not a panic attack, but I was sparring and it got a bit out of hand and I freaked out and got really like, oh, I can't do it. And, you know, so stuff does still happen, but it's how you deal with it. And I think I recover from things quicker and I'm able to kind of talk myself round rather than always relying on someone else. There's been a lot of different things. And on the day, I was still really nervous. You know, I could feel it like in my fingers and my toes. Like it was all over. Like the urge to literally run off was huge. You know, I wanted to just get the hell out of there. But, you know, I've done it before and I had a support team around me. So I think there's factors that help you to be braver. So having a strong team, people you trust in your corner, thinking positively and visualizing success that you've had before, training harder than you think is possible or that you ever imagined would be necessary. You know, I think sometimes we set out to do things, but we're not prepared to put the work in. And we get into this kind of excuses culture where, you know, if you want something, you set yourself the goal and then you take steps towards it every day. And if you're going to make excuses, then you're not going to get there. And yet, you know, in my work and friends and family, I see people making excuses all the time. It is easy to do, but you don't achieve the goal that you set out to achieve. So I think having a kind of no excuses policy and then a keeping on going policy where you just keep doing it, we give up so easily, I think. I see my clients and, you know, they feel like results should happen quickly. Results should just, we're sold the lie, I think, that, you know, you just do this, this, and this, and mm-hmm. success comes. It does come, but it takes time, and it builds gradually. And if you give up, it doesn't come.
Absolutely. Well, mad respect for you and the boxing journey. That sounds awesome, but difficult. What do you tell your clients when you hear them coming up with excuses? When you can spot that it's clearly an excuse.
The funny thing is, I laugh to myself internally because I know, like, my boxing coach would say, "Stop being a," and then insert expletive there. And so for me, like, that works for me. Like, if someone calls me out on it, I respect that. And I go, "Oh, shut up." And then I realize they're right and I get on with it. Mm-hmm. That's really not my style, mm-hmm. as you can tell. So I tend to just say something to them like, "I feel like you're making excuses."
Right.
And I just kind of call them out on it in a nice way and just say, you know, maybe we need to look at things slightly differently, or what would happen if you didn't say that and we focused on this instead. Mm. So, yeah, I do it. I'm nice. I do it in a nice way, but I'm still strict, you know. Mm-hmm. I have to, because I want to get results for people. And I think people don't realize how strong they are. You know, I think with me, I didn't realise that I was actually strong underneath, and I might be little on the outside, but on the inside, I'm strong. And sometimes I think we don't quite realise how strong we are.
Mm. When you talk about big business and big dreams, ideas, success, what does that all look like to you?
So to me, I like the idea of a little big business. Mm-hmm. I like the idea that it's just me, and I'm leading this fairly stress-free existence where I enjoy my work, and I work from home, and the dog's under the desk, and I can go to the gym, and it's all pretty chilled out. But I like the idea of a big impact. So the fact that I can work with clients all over the world and get invited to give talks all over and, you know, help lots of people feels really important to me. And I like the fact that I kind of get to do it in this fairly kind of calm way. So I'm not interested. Like, we talked before we went on air, didn't we, about getting up at 5 a.m. And, you know, that culture around sort of hustling and grinding, like really working super, super hard, that just doesn't interest me because I feel like it should be fun. Mm-hmm. So I'm all for like having a laugh, making it fun, helping lots of people. And, you know, if I make lots of money at the same time, then that's awesome.
I think that resonates really well with, well, certainly with me, and I think with my listeners, that there isn't a formula, right? If there would be a formula, then, well, this is a show about uncertainty, then a formula would make it certain. So if it was formulaic, then everyone would have, you know, loads of success. Instead,
I don't believe in formulae for this, and yet the thing that winds me up is that we're sold formulae all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, people say, "Oh, follow this and you're guaranteed X, Y, and Z. You know, this is what I did, you can do it too."
Right.
And it's just nonsense because everything's different. There are so many variables, and I can't guarantee anybody's success. You know, I can show them what I can show you what I've done, but in fact, I think that would even just be doing you a disservice because when I work with clients, I don't just get everyone to replicate what I've done. And yet a lot of people do that. I prefer to actually look at what you're doing and understand it and come up with the best ways for you, not some sort of out-of-the-box kind of solution, you know, because every business and every person is different, and I can share kind of general principles and talk about things in general, but I think that their individuality is lost if it's just a one-size-fits-all. Like, you know, if you tried to buy one-size-fits-all clothes, it would never fit. They never do. They're always really small.
So
I'm not about to do that in my work either. And yet people do it. It's just so lazy. I think it's lazy.
I see it all the time. And yet I've worked as a management consultant in previous lives. And it can be... clients can look at you as the expert, so tell me what to do, and you might be an expert in a specific subject matter, but you're not an expert in the client. The client is the only expert in where they're coming from. So there needs to be a meeting in between, otherwise the thing isn't going to work.
Yeah, I agree. And it's actually crazy because in management consultancy, if you went in and said, yeah, here's our out-of-the-box solution, they'd all go, oh, I don't want that because everyone else has got it. Yeah. And yet I think something about small business and maybe the online world is strange. It's the opposite. People want the kind of out-of-the-box solution. which is a weird thing. Maybe because they feel like it will be easier.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I think there's... the word entrepreneur gets bandied about too easily as well.
Yeah, me too.
It's very easy to call yourself that, but, or for people to call themselves that, but you know, what is your business? What are you doing? Who are your clients? What's your
sometimes
vision?
Sometimes it's someone's just self-employed, and I think there's nothing wrong with positioning yourself as being self-employed. But I mean, when I first started out and when I was growing up, an entrepreneur was someone, you know, often who had an invention, who'd created something new. There was an element of innovation there. And somehow now everyone's an entrepreneur, whereas they're not implementing any kind of innovation into what they do.
What would you how would you help someone, so mostly for my listeners who might be thinking, oh, this sounds like really compelling, what I do want to be an entrepreneur, or I want to be maybe more entrepreneurial, how would you perhaps help them get further along that journey?
Yeah, I guess it depends. So if you haven't got a business yet and you're looking for ideas, or you're, you know, at work and you're thinking, man, I've got to get out of here. Yeah, then I love helping people to have ideas. I used to work for a consultancy where we got paid to help massive companies have ideas, which was super fun. So yeah, I can help people who don't have an idea to find an opportunity and to kind of develop that into a business. That's a fun thing to do. The other thing I help people do is if they have a business and maybe it's not performing, as in it's not working around their life very well, or it's not making enough money, or it's just exhausting them in general, then I help people to make changes to the way they run it, to scale, to leverage their time and all of those kinds of things so that they can grow it and have more fun in their lives because they're enjoying their business. And I'm starting to also introduce a bit more mindset work as well around bravery. That's something new that I'm going to be bringing out soon to help people to embrace their like inner fierceness and to do scary stuff in order to help them achieve their goals.
That sounds fantastic. Train their bravery muscle.
Yeah, indeed. And I've got a kind of name in mind for it, but it's very much work in progress. So, yeah, if you're kind of looking to be braver, then just let me know, hit me up, and I'll keep you posted.
Fantastic. Yeah. We've covered a lot of ground. Was there anything that you wanted to touch on that we didn't get a chance to?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to just give a couple of tips around risk. Because I know that's kind of why we were here. So I like to think to mitigate risk, I try and think of everything as a test. Mm. So, as I said, I grew up in an entrepreneurial house. My mum's actually an inventor. So
wow.
I know, it's pretty cool. So our house was always full of prototypes. There were always prototypes all around the house. Things in weird positions, like hanging upside down and stuff to see if they worked. And I think as an entrepreneur or as someone who's self-employed, when you're launching something new or trying something different, think of it as a test. So just put it out there in a kind of minimal way and just see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about making it perfect. Just get a sense of whether you think it's a goer, and then you can invest a bit more time and a bit more money into it. And as you're doing that, listen to people. Listen to what they're telling you. I think sometimes we get really set in our own ways and set in what we want to hear.
Mm.
And we're not really listening to people because, and I mean, everyone does this. I do it too, where you've kind of set yourself, you've decided it's going to be like this. And everyone around you is kind of giving you hints that it's not going to work or they need it to be different. But you're being stubborn and you're not listening. So I think it's really important to look for clues and try and really open up your ears to hearing what people are actually telling you rather than trying to gloss over it and choose to have selective hearing, like my son who's 10, because he really has got that. And then when I'm scared, so when I'm taking a risk and I'm feeling like afraid, I try and focus on the people that I'm helping. My people, and it really helps me to think about the fact that if I don't do it, if I don't have the guts to see it through, then I won't be able to help them. And if they're kind of sat there waiting for me to do something, and my fears get the better of me, then I'm really letting them down. And so it takes the pressure off me and makes me focus more on my people. And ultimately, when you're running a business or creating something important, the chances are you're doing it for others and not really just for yourself.
Hmm. That's really fantastic. And there's so much great stuff there. I had a couple of thoughts. One of them was that when you're talking about listening, that's such an important skill. I've been doing a little bit of research into decision making, as I want to do some business stuff around that. And I was thinking about some kind of thing that I could sell, etc. And started to talk to people about how they make decisions and all of this stuff. And one of the things that really came back to me that sounds so obvious, but was a revelation to me, was that people decide with emotions. people decide like human beings. They don't decide like robots. They weigh the pros and cons and, you know, come up with some analytical tool that's going to give you the right answer. And no one would be interested in that at all. But if you can meet me at a point where I'm a human being and this is how I kind of make decisions, then I can work with you. And that was like, wow. And if I hadn't spoken to people, I wouldn't have known that. And I would have been like plugging away at some kind of prototype or something that would never have flown.
Yeah, and I think maybe it's laziness, but I get all my clients to do research, like in-depth research with their people. Before they launch anything, they have to go and talk to people. And they all, you know, people moan about it. They don't want to do it. It's scary. It's hard.
Scary,
it's a lot of work. They're putting them, you know, they feel like, oh my God, how am I going to find people? They're all going to say this. They might say that. And it pushes people's buttons. Or as my son would say, it triggers them. I love the fact that he says that when he's 10.
Right.
I don't know where he got that from, but it triggers them. And I think it's just so important to do it as part of your process, because if you don't, you get so far down the line, the risks are so high because mm-hmm. you haven't listened to anybody.
No.
And that's a big waste of time and money for the sake of a small time investment early on.
And the adjustments that you might make, I mean, I think sometimes perhaps there might be an entrepreneur, there's got to be an app. It's an app. And it might actually not work at all as an app, but maybe it's you speaking about it. And you'd get loads of people coming to listen to you speak about it.
Yeah, I think sometimes we've made a decision that it's going to be a certain way, a certain format, and mm-hmm. then you speak to your audience and it's like they don't want that at all. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, you can see it happening. Often people are like, oh, I'm going to do a webinar on this.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're teaching mums.
Yep.
I mean, how many mums do you know that go, none?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I tried a webinar and it didn't.
It's kind of interesting because
it didn't seem to work. So but there's that initial blow that like, oh well, maybe no one wants to hear what I have to offer, right? But it's just no. It's just the way there might be loads of other things that are behind that.
Yeah, there's always factors, and it could be. You know, we could talk about this all day.
Unless you
and talk to people first, and so I mean that's something to do in order to reduce risk.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Nadia, for my listeners who like what they hear and they would be interested in following you and perhaps working with you, how can they find you?
Sure, I'd love to hear from you guys. So head over to my website, that's nadiafiner.com, NadiaFiner.com. And on my site, you can download useful things, listen to my podcast, and also book in for a call to chat to me. And yeah, I'm excited to help you to go big in your business or in your life and help you achieve your goals too.
Nadia, thank you very much. This was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye for now. All right, folks, I hope you found that enjoyable and informative. Nadia is awesome, so check her out. Links are in the show notes as usual. And before we go, a quick update that my 46-kilometer birthday run to celebrate 46 years on this planet went well. It was a very satisfying experience, although the last 5 kilometers or so were pretty painful. But while the run is over and while I'm fully recovered now, our Just Giving campaign, my Just Giving campaign for Mind, the Battersea Dogs and Cats Home, and Médecins Sans Frontières, also known as Doctors Without Borders, is still open. Links to that are in the show notes. And finally, if you've not yet subscribed to All Things Risk, just go to allthingsrisk.co.uk, that's .co.uk, to find all the ways in which you can do that. Our next full episode will be in 2 weeks. Until then, and as always, don't forget, risk is life.